morning on Tuesday, May 1st, 2012. This is Brian Madden, and you're listening to Brian and Gabe Live.
Hello, everyone. Do we not have music today?
We turned down the music on Skype so that you don't have music blasting in your ears. We're trying to plan
our show. It's so complex over there now. We've all, you know, our little studio is all grown up.
Although, actually, I do still hear the music in my ear.
Yeah, I was just going to comment on that.
After saying that. So just going to comment on that. That is Jack Madden here in San Francisco. Thanks for joining today, Jack.
Good morning, Brian. Good morning, Gabe.
Other guy, Gabe Knuth from Omaha, Nebraska. Thank you, Gabe, for joining.
Hey, as always.
And joining us via Skype from, I don't know, East Coast somewhere is Jeff Fisher. How are you today, Jeff?
Doing great, Brian. Thanks so much for having me.
And where are you? Are you in Boston right now?
I am in Manhattan.
Oh, cool. Do you live there? Or?
I do.
Fun. And so, Jeff Fisher, you are with, is it Res Software or RES Software? I always ask that.
We prefer RES these days.
Okay, so you are with RES. You were formerly, I think I met you first possibly at Bri Forum in 2005, the very first Bri Forum, where you were with Softricity, right?
Correct, but we had actually met before that. I was on the Citrix SE team back in 02 and 03, and you came down for a Citrix quarterly in Fort Lauderdale and as HP with your book, and so
So Citrix, Softricity to Microsoft, you were with Destone for a good while, and you're now with RES Software.
RES, yeah.
Correct.
And so welcome. And, you know, I guess we can sort of let's jump right into why you are on the phone with us today. Let's see. I wrote an article for Consumerize IT, I guess. Oh, how long ago was this? Let me pull this up. HyperDrive. So RES Software announced a product called HyperDrive. And I think that's the idea with HyperDrive. Maybe if you just want to talk a little bit about what HyperDrive is, I'm going to post the link to the chat. I want the record to show that I'm a big fan of HyperDrive, but just kind of explain what this HyperDrive thing is.
Absolutely. So HyperDrive is RES's sort of play on follow me data. And really, you know, sort of the world post Dropbox where everyone's thinking about how to create and enable ubiquitous access for end users to their unstructured data, in our case. So, you know, what would be considered sort of work product that you create with Office applications or other applications that you'd want to have accessibility from, you know, across multiple clients. And what we, you know, knew from the start was that in order for enterprises to adopt this, they would need to have more control over the back end, over the storage, over security, provisioning, etc. And that just really didn't exist in most of the more well-known solutions. So that sort of led to the beginning of the HyperDrive product development exercise, which actually, you know, started probably over a year ago.
And so you talk about follow me data, and this is a term that I think Citrix and VMware and some of these other companies are using. But the sort of the tweet version of this is this. Stop me if this sounds wrong, but I mean HyperDrive. It's like Dropbox, but it's an on-premise Dropbox. So for companies who want, you know, iOS client, Android client, web, Mac, just file synchronization for folders, but don't trust having that data sort of out in the public cloud and with questionable security. It's like if a company wants to roll their own Dropbox, this is what HyperDrive does.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. And is HyperDrive, this is available now? This is beta? What's the situation?
It's still pre-release, and it's going to be available this month, actually. In the month of May, we're going to go GA with it.
Okay. And then, so I'm going to now post a link to the chat, which is a blog post written by one of your competitors at AppSense, who accused RES Software of, it's like a white, saying that HyperDrive was not a product that was developed by RES, rather it's a white label of another product. And we were talking back and forth, and there's a lot of conversation on Twitter because I think a lot of people were sort of the same opinion that, you know, if it's a white label product, okay, that's fine. This happens all the time. Who cares if it's OEM or white label or something like that? But then some people say, no, that should have been disclosed, because like I know when I was talking to I think it was Bob about Hyperdrive a month or two ago when I wrote the article, no one ever mentioned that this was an OEM product. It sounded like it was a product that was developed by RES. And then on Twitter, Jeff, you and I went back and forth a few times when you were saying, no, we added value, here's what we do, here's the difference. Sure. And really that's a conversation not for Twitter. So that's why you're here now. So talk about Hyperdrive versus, I think it's called NomaDesk, which is sort of a maker of this product that they sell direct, and they also sell as white label options. So maybe you can talk about those two right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's absolutely not a white label product. We decided, we made a strategic decision back last year. You know, Bob and team, when they looked at the space, they looked at the sort of the time to market, the complexity of building our own solution from scratch, and it became clear that we really wanted to align with someone who had deep expertise in this space. And that led us to a short list, and we decided to work with the NomaDesk guys. And so specifically what we did was we took a solution that was really designed for sort of a public cloud environment and spent most of our time working on the back end, right? So you're not going to see a lot of differentiation other than the RES branding when you look at the clients. They're going to look, you know, pretty much the same as the NomaDesk clients. But on the back end, you will see a virtual appliance, first of all, that was created to allow enterprises to deploy this, the back end of the system, very, very robustly and quickly without having to, you know, in a typical public cloud scenario, you're dealing with someone's often homegrown solution that's never packaged or designed to be, you know, replicate the deployment. So the virtual appliance is a key piece that we co-developed. SQL Server support for the data store was something that NomaDesk did not support before we worked with them, leading to Active Directory integration, which is obviously key because you don't want to have a separate set of credentials. And then all the extension that we've been doing to other products within the RES portfolio, starting with Automation Manager to really manage the provisioning of hyperdrives. And then also the Baseline Desktop Analyzer, which has now been updated. That's our free cloud-hosted Azure service that does desktop assessment. That's been updated now to detect Dropbox usage within an organization. So lots to talk about. It really depends on which direction you guys want to take it.
Okay, well, I'll tell you, I want to take it on the controversy direction because I'm curious about some of the things that you said. So you talked about that NomaDesk had NomaDesk had their offering, and then you mentioned the word that you co-developed stuff with them. So, for example, creating a virtual appliance, SQL Server for the data store, AD integration. So you say that stuff that you co-developed with them, which means so that stuff is available from NomaDesk. Like, are those changes put back in the NomaDesk offering? So now the NomaDesk offering and the RES offering are the same, but some of the most recent features they got were sort of developed by you guys?
No, those capabilities and features are only available through the RES offering.
Okay. And that's also and NomaDesk and RES, is it the same board members or the same investors, or it's the same company? There's some kind of relationship there, right?
Yeah, we share an investor in a company called GIMF. It's a European venture capital firm.
Okay, cool. So, and you know, from my standpoint, it goes back to everything. Like, a lot of people really talked about how the AppSense post was childish and an attack on RES. I have to, in this case, like, I feel like that, like, the blog post was a fair blog post, because I don't think the AppSense went after the technology necessarily, but I definitely, you can understand from the client standpoint, you know, when, because they had people, then internet went wild and people were posting screenshots of DLLs and versions and all that kind of stuff. But what you're saying, Jeff, is that this integration, since it's on the back end, so the NomaDesk client and the RES Hyperdrive clients are going to have the same DLLs and same versions and timestamps because the clients are the same. All the integration is different, is back-end stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and in terms of the way the information sort of came out. You know, we had made a ton of progress, and by the beginning of this year, 2012, you know, the offering was in good shape. We started to preview it to people. And then you know what happens. Everything sort of goes viral on Twitter, and then we sort of felt compelled to respond with some detail. But unfortunately, at that time, had not finished and finalized the agreements with Nomadesk, so we couldn't talk about that piece. So it's, you know, it's like everything else in life. It's a balance. You know, we've you know, it's interesting. RES, you know, the advice we've been given in the past is we haven't been aggressive enough. You know, now we're really sort of making an attempt at being more aggressive, and of course, you know what happens.
Well, I mean, to be fair, you know, I feel like I looked like an idiot because I wrote this whole, you know, thing about RES, Hyperdrive, and Awesome, and all, like, in all the conversations I had with RES, like, little heads up would have been kind of nice that, hey, by the way, you know, your readers are going to find this other product, and they're going to do side-by-side screenshots and see that it's identical, and see that it has, like, I mean, Nomadesk has white label options, you know, listed on their website. So, you know, don't take this as you guys got burned by being more aggressive. I feel like you could have just mentioned because you could have the same conversation now today that we're having today. If you would have had that conversation 6 months ago, none of this would have happened. But if you went out and were like, hey, we took this product, it's a pretty good product, but not 100%, you know, enterprise focused, like with AD integration and SQL. If you would have done that, you know, immediately, and that was like a little byline in my article as I was writing about RES Hyperdrive, then none of this controversy would have existed.
Yeah, no, I hear you. No, it's, you know, hindsight is 20/20, and we might have done things differently had we known how it was going to turn out. So it was certainly not our intention to mislead you or anybody else.
So now, so in terms of support and everything, like if I'm buying this product, I don't mean me, Brian, but because I use Dropbox so far. Maybe our IT guys buy this. I don't know, but we. You know, so is it RES? Like, it's RES that stands behind it, right? So, like, I don't have to, like, if Nomadesk, whether Nomadesk is successful or not, like, is that something I need to sort of do my due diligence on Nomadesk, or do you guys have relationships with them where you have access to code and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, no, we are fully supporting our solution, and we'll stand by it with the incredible support that we've always delivered for all of our products. So
what is the agreement with Nomadesk then? Is that, I mean... So if Nomadesk were to go away, Hyperdrive would still exist and could still be maintained?
Yep.
That's something, absolutely, I think that's coming up. Okay. And then the other question from the chat room right now is, what's to stop someone else from also doing a Nomadesk-based solution? Does RES have an exclusive agreement, or is there other companies that could also do the Nomadesk thing? I guess is the Nomadesk solution still available is what they want to know.
Nomadesk is going to continue to ship their solution. I mean, there is exclusivity as part of the agreement. I can't really go into the details of exactly what that covers for other people sort of, you know, wanting to repackage their stuff.
Okay.
But to be clear, so the Active Directory support, the SQL Server support, and the virtual appliance, that's something you only get with RES Hyperdrive, not through Nomadrive or Nomadesk.
Correct.
And as to whether those features make it into Nomadesk, I guess I'm sure you don't comment on that.
Yeah, can't comment. Sorry.
Okay, well, there we go. So look, lesson learned, I guess.
Controversy section over.
Yeah. But man, don't give me this 2020 crap. How many times for 20 years all this stuff happens where people, you know, like, don't disclose everything, and then are like later on, like, oh, well, you know, who could know? I'm like, who could know? The internet could know. This controversy happens like 1,000 times a year. So, you know, next time you can not have it happen to you.
Yeah.
So what I want to do, and Jeff, you know, the specific stuff that we wanted to talk to you about, what kind of was this, but, you know, what we do on the show kind of every week is, as we discuss topics in general, we sort of discuss, you know, the week's news and that sort of thing, and we try to have someone else on the phone just to give it more color besides the three of us. So you're welcome to hang out with us for the next 45 minutes as we just chat about kind of random industry stuff, and feel free to interject as you know, someone who's been in this space for 15 plus years. You know, jump in whenever you want.
Fantastic. We'd love to do it.
And don't be afraid to speak up, because we can get going. So, so yeah, jump in whenever you want. So,
yeah, no, it's the New Yorker in me will come out. Don't worry about it.
So here's what I want to talk about next. Gabe, you wrote an article called Unmanaging Your Endpoints.
Okay.
And I think that's brilliant. There's a link there to it. And this is we kind of touched on this in our book. So to kind of give some backstory, I was speaking yesterday at a conference called Tech, the Experts Conference, I think TEC, in San Diego. And I kind of gave my typical spiel about, you know, management and Active Directory and all this kind of stuff. And I was talking about, you know, I wrote an article based on the conversation we had last week on the show. I wrote an article saying, hey, the fact that Windows RT, that's the ARM-based version of Windows 8, the fact that you cannot add Windows RT to a domain is fine because, A, you know, like using domain for management, for systems management seems kind of antiquated, and B, Windows RT, it's all, you can't install it software on it anyway except from the App Store. But we were kind of, I was kind of thinking like, you know, the whole idea of tying management to domain membership is kind of going away because we can manage thin clients and those are not domain joined, and we can manage iOS devices and Androids and all these with MDM and MAM solutions. And then it got me thinking like, hey, well, we can manage home computers. Like users are able to connect from home and we can deal with that and they're not domain joined. And we're using different combinations of SSL VPN with scans and delivering applications remotely and streaming apps and Windows and web apps and that kind of stuff. And then it just kind of led sort of into your article, which is why, like, even for Windows endpoints, like, why do I want to have these in a domain? Isn't that just making, or why do I want to manage these endpoints at all anyway, I guess?
Well, right. So, yeah, we had the domain conversation last week, and we settled on, you know, it was typical. The conversation we had last week was you saying AD is dead, and I'm saying, whoa, let's hold off on the language, man. You know, AD is not going away, but managing stuff with AD, let's call that, you know, that's not as important anymore. So, you know, as usually, we're speaking the same language, and we're just having an argument for the hell of it. So, we're saying the same thing. We're speaking different languages. But then, yes, and we've talked about this other concept here before, I think, as well, about unmanaging the devices. Just make, you know, you and I have talked about, just make everybody do the VPN. And I don't know if we've done it on the radio show or if that was during the calls that we had about the book while we were writing that. Or,
We've
had a fair amount of arguments about that, too, saying, and I'm like, no, that's bullshit. Nobody wants to use the VPN all the time to connect in, especially if they're at the office. And so that's sort of where this whole thing started from. And I actually had conversations in Charlotte 2 weeks ago, whenever it was that I was there, with some people that were saying the same thing. And I thought, all right, so if other people are talking about this too, let's get it all
they
out there.
They were saying the same thing as you or the same thing as me?
The same thing as me. Well, the same thing as you. No. The same thing as you in that, you know, I mentioned that one of the options that you can have, because I think we were talking about the cost models and about how a lot of cost models assume that you're going to repurpose your PCs as thin clients, but that's a hidden cost that people aren't aware of, because you still have to find a way to manage those devices then. And so one of the alternatives that the presentation in Charlotte was awesome, because people kept bringing stuff up, and so we went in a bunch of different directions. It wasn't just stick to the deck. And so one of the things that branched out from there was, how do we manage those devices then? And I said, you know, there's some argument to be made that you don't have to manage them. And some people started nodding. And so we had a 5-10 minute conversation about that, just kind of in the middle of the presentation, which I love that when that happens. And so that's kind of where I, you know, started putting more and more thoughts together in the article. And so it does, in a way, it agrees with what you were saying, except I don't like the VPN centric approach, just because I hate our VPN. Like, yeah. I literally just cannot stand the thing.
Okay, so let me
I hate that I have to use it for everything, because I hate that I have to use it to make a help desk ticket. I hate that I have to use it to check email with Outlook.
But that can be our dumbass policies.
It is. I'm tainted.
Remember when we used the Citrix Access Gateway back before TechTargets? Mm-hmm. And that was there. Like, that was so seamless. And Grant, I don't want to, like, probably lots of SSL VPNs are actually, like, legitimately good. The piece of shit that we have, I think, is from the 90s, so it's not quite.
I think ours is good, too. I think it's one of the policies that don't expose things that would be secure outside of the organization. They just kind of, they're like, we have to make this available to people outside. And they're like, put it on the put it behind the VPN.
I love that the fire. Well, yeah, and I love that our. I love the access gateway. And again, I'm sure that lots of them do this, but I love that it was just a system tray thing, and I didn't have to like run it or load it. It was just sort of like always there, and I had good confidence that it was doing proper split DNS and route, you know, taking only the stuff it needed to take in its direction. And versus ours, you know, you got to go to the thing, and it only works on Safari for Mac users, and then you have to push this other button and log in, and then it just, I don't know, it's like plugins and all that kind of crap. So,
well, so the idea here, and with that, back in those days when we had the CAG, you know, the fact that none of us were together, right? We were all separate, all over the place. So everything we did, none of it was centralized. And so if you look at that article and you see these drawings of where you can place the firewall and where you can place the data and everybody else, we had the one that I labeled refreshingly simple that just had the data center with a big, thick firewall around it that, you know, there's a few holes both for what we need and that's it. But a lot of organizations have, especially smaller ones, have no delineations between one or the other, and the data center sits in the same network as the PCs, as the cubicles. And so even and if there's no firewalls in between, I mean, that's, I called that in the article, I call that alarmingly simple.
But I like that though.
You like that the PCs sit on the same network as the data?
So in that middle drawing you have where it says,
oh, the middle drawing
data center.
Yeah, the good one. Yeah.
Oh, alarmingly simple. Oh, I gotcha. Yeah, yeah. Okay, right. Yeah.
Alarmingly simple, it's and then refreshingly
drawing.
Simple.
Yeah.
Right. So
we're like marketers now. Do you like alarmingly simple or refreshing? Well, I choose refreshingly simple. Yes.
There's not enough colors. Yeah. to be marketing guys, no colors. But so having everything residing on one network does make that a management nightmare, because you can't just repurpose those PCs. You still have to manage them. Otherwise, you've got a free for all happening on the same network as, you know, the same. Relative network, I guess,
well,
as your data.
Yeah, these can be different subnets and
networks
that's the same wires, but
exactly. And so, that's why I say that's alarmingly simple. Like, yes, it's simple, but Jesus. So the other one was the other option. There was just okay, wall off the data center and just make everything else treat it like it's the internet.
Yes, that's what
and
I love.
I realize, right, and I know you love that. I think that there's a place for that. But I still think that there's the place for the more
is everywhere.
Advanced. Yeah. I know you think that. So I still think that the proper solution is probably segmented out so that there's an IT-specific network or a user-specific network that's still treated as insecure, but then there's still a guest network that isn't the same as the user network. And like,
okay, so
and most organizations go that route. They still classify things in different ways, but it's all treating it treats everything outside the data center with various levels of insecurity, right? So everything outside the data center is insecure. The IT guy is probably, you know, you would treat the IT guy as more secure than a regular user or the guest wireless network or the internet.
Okay, so by the way, those of you tweeting about MoCA 5, we'll get to that next. But to me, so isn't that more complex though? Because if you put the security around, I'm going to call it your resource that you want to protect. So in the drawing that you have, it's called a data center, but let's call it, you put the security around your resource, and everyone trying to get to that resource has to go through whatever security hoops you want them to, whether it's encryption or scanning or VPN or what have you. The one below where you've got user network, guest network, internet, and IT network, isn't that more complex? Because now you're supporting different levels of security for different populations?
The drawing is more complex. The way that I think of this is that, you know, the IT network can have more or less, you know, whatever access it needs, right? Keep security in mind, but they get the access that they need to do their job.
But isn't that just a different policy
on the
VPN?
I would say that there's not much of a VPN, if at all, between the IT network and the data center.
Why?
I mean, there's going to be some security there, but come on.
What's the IT network? It's their own wireless network?
It's the IT guys would be on. But just hang on. So the user network and all the other ones really is just, you know, the user network could say these guys are local. They don't need to go through the VPN to get here, but we're only going to open up whatever, you know, whatever tiny few ports they need. Or if they do need to get securely to something, they can. We can do that with a VPN as well. Whereas the guest network is completely walled off. There's no ports open. There's no nothing. You have to go through the VPN. You have to get through all the checks. You have to go through everything. And the internet, of course, is everything all at once.
But we have,
so you can still treat those user networks, you can still treat them as unmanaged devices then by just allowing, you know, certain ports through there. certain services through there, I guess I should say. But you can still treat those devices as unmanaged. The idea, though, is to just keep them as separate as possible from the data center.
But we have an entire series of articles on consumerized IT, which talks about like running shit through other ports and, you know, just bringing in your own D-Link router from Best Buy and all these
I don't care if you do that. You're not doing something in the data center and running it from another port. I don't give a shit what you do to get to the internet. It's an unmanaged device. You can do whatever you want. I'm talking about the wall at the data center.
But why? So you're still firewalling your data center.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that's a good start, I guess. But now isn't it different? Like now that means as a user, if I'm going to access a resource with my laptop, I do it in a different way when I'm in the office versus when I'm out of the office?
It could.
Isn't that more complex? Like my point is, if you just...
I suppose, but I'm not. But look, I would rather have a slightly less shitty experience when I'm at the office than I would when I'm not at the office.
How is that
a worse experience? Keep in mind here that these things are still unsecured or unmanaged the whole way around, so they're still being treated.
Agreed.
I'm not suggesting that we treat them as their managed devices or any less secure.
Agreed.
I'm just saying that if you're sitting out at the airport, there is more surface area to compromise than there is if you're sitting on a network wholly contained within the building.
But if you have a good VPN, go back to like they're saying, you know, you're using direct access from Win7. If it's a Windows device, you've got like an access gateway or something like that. If you have a good VPN, from the user standpoint, it is not a worse experience if you're connecting to a resource through the VPN versus connecting not through the VPN.
If that Nirvana exists, then that's fine. But
that we had that with our Citrix access gateway. God, I sound like a shill for them. And there's probably millions more. Please tell me more others besides so I can stop saying the word Citrix. But
so, Gabe, I think your point is that there should have at least – you're saying, come on, there's got to be some sort of benefit in there somewhere for being in the office. I mean, if anything, like, hey, you're just on the you get to be on the LAN.
But I can
be, yeah, I mean, well, that's basically it.
But I can have a fast – what the LAN. So what? I'm on the LAN. It's fast. I'm faster at home than in the LAN here.
Well, now we're talking about TechTarget, and you haven't said Citrix Access Gateway in 10 seconds. Look, this whole situation assumes, like, your situation assumes that there's some sort of perfect Nirvana solution out there. And if that thing exists, then yeah, what the hell? Why not treat it like that?
Perfect. Done. Next conversation.
Listen, so I like the idea that, hey, maybe somehow, somewhere, there are some additional benefits that you get in the office. Like, that'd be great. But on the other hand... why bother having that slight difference in benefits, because it'll only confuse things and make things more complicated. So I agree with both of you.
Well, this idea of having different class of service for in the office and out of office, yeah, Microsoft has that too. It's called SA and ERR and CDL and all that kind of crap.
So you guys are just...
That reminds me of that line from The Office, or from Office Space.
Which is what?
The pieces of flare line.
I don't know that one.
Anyway, never mind.
So, but the thing is,
it has nothing to do with Microsoft. You can't compare it to that.
I'm just saying that Microsoft makes a differentiation.
But all I'm doing is taking a more realistic approach at what organizations do today. And these places already have this division in networks and services and offerings that they have for these people. But the fact of the matter is that user network typically still exists somewhere adjacent without some sort of major block to the data center. And I'm saying that you need to separate those, and you can keep things this way, but you still have to separate them. And organizations aren't just going to go, oh yeah, you know what? That Brian's right. I'm just going to wall everything off and treat everything like it's the internet. That doesn't happen.
It could though. By the way, Justin, we're getting bad quality from Gabe. You want to kill his video stream just to give us some more bandwidth? Right, so I would say what the approach I'm advocating is a forward-moving approach. I recognize that today no one has put the wall just around the resources they want to protect. But one of the benefits of putting the wall around just the resources you want to protect is now your resources don't have to live in your data center. So now you can have resources in your primary data center, in secondary data centers, in co-locations, cloud-based resources. And now
do you understand the scope of that? Because the scope of that means that there's no more data on the endpoints, right? That means that everything has to live in the data center.
No, it just means that the device. So the data, like just like with Dropbox and mail caching and that kind of stuff, that doesn't change. I'm just saying that rather than having a network, because to me, when you have different sort of VPN or firewall rules based on different physical networks, you're making what are dangerous assumptions that I assume that I can treat these users differently because I trust who they are based on their location. And we've proven time and time again that...
Oh, I'm not saying you treat them any differently. I still say you treat them as unmanaged devices. I'm not saying
from the network standpoint,
like that.
But I'm inherently trusting them. I recognize we're not talking about management, but I'm inherently trusting them more if I'm not making them go through the VPN when they're in the office versus making them go through the VPN when they're outside the office. That means your physical, you connecting to this network means that I trust you more. And my argument is that you cannot assume trust based on what network the user is coming from.
No, but I'm talking about the surface area that they have to be compromised, right? The internet, like I said, if you're sitting at the airport, your ability to get compromised is significantly higher if you're out there on the public web than you are if you're sitting in the organization.
Right.
So, again, this is treating all of these things as unmanaged, all of these things as insecure, but there are still different levels, different attack surfaces out there.
I don't get how that's – but how's that really relevant? Because you can – you know, if a machine has been owned by some zombie or remote accessed or
look,
whatever.
If you can find the perfect solution that allows me to behave just like I am on the internet or over the raw internet as well as I can if I'm sitting somewhere local, that's fine.
Didn't
but
we have that
doesn't
with the
exist.
Access gateway?
No, it doesn't
what,
exist.
What,
it does
what
not,
didn't you like about the access gateway?
That you had to use it. You still knew
how,
it was there.
I don't want
to know it's there.
That little thing was in my system tray. You never click the button. Like it just lives in the system tray. We can set policies to re-authenticate every so often or whatever. But when we opened and closed laptops, rebooted, had connections coming and going, we never had to jump through any hoops to connect to VPN. It just hooked us right through automatically.
You still knew it was there. Well, you have to because you know that every single VPN connection is there, and to say that you don't is unrealistic. Every single person that connects to the VPN knows they do it and hates that they do it.
But what did you tell me exactly what you hated about the access gateway?
That I had to connect through it, and that I knew it was there because it didn't always work. It always had little issues. You never used it either, so I don't want to hear that because you're going off of the 6 times you ever used it to connect to something, and you never used it for that kind of stuff because all your email was punched through. You never used the VPN for that.
Well,
if anything, I used it more than you did because I was actually in there doing the management stuff, and I hated the thing. And
so,
you never used the VPN
so what
for
you're
tech target
okay,
either
so,
because it sucks.
So what you're saying is that if there was a VPN client that was the experience that you liked, then you're fine with doing that as a concept?
Yes.
And what is it about?
But I'm saying that that's not very realistic right now, given what's already going on in organizations. And there's no way a company right now is just going to rip out everything they got in favor of something else. It's probably going to deliver a worse experience.
So I spoke on Thursday night to a room full of CIOs from some super huge companies and advocated this exact thing.
That's fine. But that doesn't mean they're going to run out and do it.
Well, we were talking. I mean, as this was one of the interesting conversation points, and granted I know they're sort of like executive leadership and not
who's ripped out everything they have, replaced it with a thin client or with a PC repurposes a thin client and doesn't have anything else to worry about.
I'm not suggesting that. I'm suggesting companies make the shift to treat the workers in the office the same way they treat the workers out of the office. So if you have to access a data center based resource, you jump through the same hoops regardless of whether you're on-premises or off-premises, which A, protects the office network because now you don't have to worry about – you don't assign trust just based on users being on the network. And B, it makes a more consistent user experience because now the user doesn't have to go through different things whether they're in the office or out of the office. It's the same way that users connect regardless of where they are.
That's fine, and I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that that's kind of unrealistic to expect companies to just do that right now, especially given the fact that solution, that perfect Nirvana solution, I've never seen it.
So that's my challenge.
You can't take that stuff away.
I have to talk to VPN, but I haven't heard from you what specifically about VPN clients you don't like.
I hate that I have to use them. I hate that I know that they're there.
Well, that's irrational.
How is that irrational?
You hate the only thing you hate is the fact that you know that it's there?
I hate that I know that it's there. I hate that I have to use it to connect to anything.
But if it's just there in the background, like you hate Wi-Fi, you know Wi-Fi is there.
No, no, no. But Wi-Fi just works.
You haven't been to our office.
Oh,
so
the
if,
Wi-Fi
okay, fine.
There.
Okay,
that's
so what you're saying, so if there's a
so,
VPN
so
that just
I hate
works.
That it's there. It's slower for me.
If you're it well, but it's split. If it's a split DNS, so it's only it's not.
But it doesn't matter if it's split. It provides a less than optimal user experience. Everyone that I've ever used has always been less than optimal.
It seems like, really, I just if it's
I mean, I'm not
there
making
in
it
the
up.
System tray, it's in the background. It's split DNS. You know that it's there just because you saw the splash screen when your computer was booting up. But other than that,
that's fine. But the experience is still less than optimal.
All right, we got to put this to bed. Are you still on the line, Jeff Fisher?
I'm here. I'm just taking it all on. This is a fascinating conversation.
So what is your thought on this?
I think, you know, so, sort of from my perspective, I think sort of a level up and this notion of, you know, a user being constantly mobile as opposed to ever being considered in a fixed location is something that we think about a lot. I just think that, you know, with sort of my RAS hat on, we think about it more from what resources are, you know, applications, data, printer mappings, drive mappings, et cetera, peripherals are exposed to them and which ones are not. And sort of the importance of the fact that, you know, you've got to be able to understand the context of the user and that, you know, to your point, Brian, that the notion of a fixed location in an official corporate headquarters is rapidly going away, right? You know, one that's maybe has a direct pipe, you know, quote unquote, to the data center. I think that really is rapidly changing.
And I'm not disagreeing with that, by the way. I mean, this whole thing is that it starts with repurposing PCs as thin clients and wondering how you're going to manage them. And I said that you shouldn't.
Right, and we agree on that. My argument has nothing.
But that doesn't change. But that's phase one. Okay, but you still have all these other PCs out there that you are still delivering the same old way, and you're managing the same way. And I'm saying that these things, you're not just going to cut and run and ditch those things. So what you're saying is a future vision is fine, but right now, that's probably not realistic. It's probably not going to happen. Nobody's just going to decide today to make that happen tomorrow. So in phases, sure, but they're not just going to blow up their entire infrastructure and do that. So this is more. This is the same stuff. This is Brian, you know, getting up on the soapbox and saying something. But then there's also the realistic view that all these companies out there still have all these other things to worry about.
But you have to. But you have to be able to articulate to me what you don't like about a VPN. You can't just say you don't like it because you know that it's there.
Yeah, I went beyond that like 5 minutes ago, man, and I said that it's not an optimal experience.
What is not optimal about it?
The actual network performance of it.
While you're on the VPN side?
Yes.
So your argument that VPNs are too slow, but if you have direct access to a port, then it's fine.
I'm saying that if I'm on that network, the more optimal experience is to connect to the thing instead of going through the VPN. That's what I'm saying. I don't know how you could argue against that.
But your argument is that, like, when you're sitting with your laptop in the office, if it's wrapping the SSL layer through your protocol, so instead of you connecting to whatever resource directly on the back end, the fact that you've got a client agent on your machine that needs to wrap it in SSL, and there's a piece of hardware that's adding a second hop in there that needs to unwrap that, you're telling me that extra overhead, you know, the 3 milliseconds in latency it adds, and the extra 4% overhead.
No,
what I'm
saying is that every single VPN experience I've ever had has been a remote experience because that's what it's for, and it's less than optimal.
Right. So, but
so if you want to sit on a local network and go through those hoops, that's fine too.
Right. Which is what I'm arguing you should do.
That's fine, but it's got to work, and it's got to work very well.
All right, we're 25 minutes into this. Let's end this conversation because we're clearly not going to resolve this anytime soon. But we'll just pause this here, and this is one of the things that Gabe and I will, I'm sure, have future words about. At 40 minutes past the hour, you're listening to Brian and Gabe Live. I'm Brian Madden from San Francisco, arguing with Gabe Knuth from Omaha. Jack Madden is here in San Francisco with me, and Jeff Fisher from RES Software is joining us from New York City. Now
I like how there's different anonymous people logging in saying Gabe is 100% correct and Brian is 100% correct.
It's all anonymous. It's all us.
But they're different people.
so many different anonymous users.
I want to know how that guy logged in two times on the same computer.
It gets really confusing, all these anonymous numbers.
Well, you know, now that Chrome tabs are separate processes, you know, you can open 100 tabs at once.
Can you guys hit the set name next time, please? you don't have to tell us who you are. Just set it something different so that it's easy to tell you apart.
Or else you set your, you know, red versus blue or something like that. I guess we can't do red and blue, though. We have to do, like, green and yellow.
Yeah.
So, how about mobile? How about Mocha 5's iOS? And I'm going to just post a link to the Mocha 5 iOS, their sort of iOS announcements. And actually, I think, Jack, was it on Consumerize IT? You shot a video about Mocha 5? Here it is, a first look.
Yeah, I put that a little bit farther up in the chat room.
Pop that in right here. So what is – okay.
Yeah,
because Mocha 5, they have – it's management – it's virtual desktops, but virtual desktops that run on your endpoint. So they can manage these virtual desktops either in a Type 2 or like a sort of bare metal hypervisor. But Mocha 5 for iOS, I mean, you can't run a VM on iOS. What is Mocha 5 for iOS?
Right. So Mocha 5 for iOS, it's not a remote desktop application. It's a file porthole application that plugs directly into your Mocha 5 VM. And the idea behind their application is that it sort of keeps everything as a closed loop, because the iOS app is plugged into the same resources that are managing your Mocha 5 client based VM, and with the iOS app you can turn off the opening capabilities so that if the user is outside of that managed VM instance, all they get is view-only capabilities from the iOS app. So basically it takes a closed loop sort of approach to keeping everything in that managed VM.
Wait, okay, so it's an app for iOS, and then I use that app, and from that app it's like reaching back into my VM and then what, giving me files and...
Yeah.
Does it remote Windows to me, or just
no? So no remoting Windows. Just you see like the iPad native file interface with all the nice touch friendly menus and everything, and you can open and view your files.
So why? But my Mocha 5 VM has to be running, which means I got to leave my laptop. Like, so the idea is, well, I get my laptop at home and I leave my laptop on and connected until it never go to sleep, so that when I'm running around with my iPad, I can connect back to my home to get my files.
So the Mocha 5 VM is synced back to the data center.
Okay,
so you have that data center copy of your VM that's keeping it in sync, that you can get access to.
So why don't I just use Dropbox?
Well, you could certainly use Dropbox, and I guess the idea is...
Or RES Hyperdrive, for that matter, right?
And yeah, the actual... exactly.
that's a good question, and this is assuming that you're taking the approach of that you want your... when the user is on their MacBook Air, that they're only using the Windows VM that you provide to them. And you know, it does keep things in a much more closed loop. But this means when you're on your MacBook or whatever, you're using a Windows VM.
And doesn't this just mean this goes back to the same problem of where if you over secure your environment, you sort of force users out to the underworld, you know? So companies are saying like, we keep all of our data in here in the VMs, and it's all corporate and secure. And then users are going to be like, maybe just
is it they give you access to? Are they giving I know that they have some sort of layering approach, right? A layering technology. Is it syncing the user layer back to the data center and then somehow syncing the files within that user layer to the iOS device? Is that what's being synchronized?
It's no synchronizing. And by the way, anonymous user Curious says, first we moan VPN is not good enough in terms of performance. Now we're suggesting we check out VMs out of and back into the data center. So two things. A, we're not suggesting this. We're just talking about this product and trying to wrap our heads around it. So don't put that on me. Nor Jack, I would think.
Right.
And secondly, this isn't about checking out VMs. It's kind of like what we're talking about with Jeff, or what Jeff was saying, that it's – so you have your client device with VMs, and it's, I guess, sort of continuously syncing data. And I think that you would be correct, Jeff, that it does – it's sort of syncing, like, user-layer data. So it's not doing, like, a block-level VMDK sync, but rather – as you're changing files, it's syncing those into the data center, and then from there, it's extending that out to an iPad.
Right.
So I guess it's sort of, like adding almost like a sort of HyperDrive, Google Drive, SkyDrive, Dropbox type functionality.
It means so that if the user does want to be using an iPad, that they, at least they don't have to completely go 100% rogue and install Dropbox. They at least have the option of being able to use the iPad and use a native interface without 100% guaranteed having to use Dropbox.
That's a fair answer.
And so that way, if the iOS app didn't exist and everything was locked into your VM, then the user could say, you know, what gives? I'm going to get my files from a mobile device, and at least now there's an answer to it.
Yeah.
Even if it's not the answer that people want or optimally want to have, there's an answer. Because I asked them, so if there would be like also a web interface or a client, so I could also sync those files like natively to my MacBook or to another Windows desktop to the way that Dropbox syncs files. And they're kind of like, well, that's not exactly the point. But at least there's an option.
I guess,
and that's a big first step.
Yeah, man, I don't know.
This gets to the whole sort of heart of the, you know, what we think about, what I personally have been thinking about is, you know, this whole notion of the hybrid desktop, which is something, you know, Brian, that I don't think, you know, and me, you and Gabe have sort of ever gotten to sit down and talk about, but it's this whole, you know, the whole, what the nirvana state, right, of being able to, I think there was, you guys did a post once about an Uber profile, you know, something that would sort of roam across any device. Clearly on the Windows side of things, you know, I think we're closer to an optimal state. But now that all these mobile devices and mobile operating systems are in the mix and there's limited access in terms of what you can develop for those solutions, it's a challenge, you know, but it's something that we think about all the time at RES, about how to really, you know, what should roam, what can roam, what's feasible. And obviously data is something that we think is universal. So that's really sort of where we started.
And Jack wrote about that before, where you kind of said, because to me, definitely the user, called the user workspace or the user environment or whatever word you want to use, I think most of us in the industry sort of agree that you've got what makes up for a user to say, this is my workspace. It's their apps, it's their data, and then it's their settings and their configuration. By using different, especially with Windows apps and web apps, we can sort of deliver the apps to whatever device they have. And then the data is easy enough to do because there's HyperDrive and Dropbox and SkyDrive and a billion other solutions that basically mean that your files are wherever you need them. Now, whether you can actually manipulate that file with a device native application or whatever you need, or if you need a remote Windows app, that's a different conversation. But then as far as the actual configuration, that's what I was talking about with the Uber profile, looking for something that allows your configuration across platforms. And that's sort of maybe the last mile right now, because we don't have that now. But I agree that data is part of the whole workspace.
All of my endpoints, my endpoint on my Mac native endpoint and my iOS endpoint, so that I don't have to, freaking add the word virtualization and consumerization to 75 different custom dictionaries.
But what is the...
So can someday, when RES can... when you can add desktop virtualization to, like, all 75 of, like, my application, endpoint application custom dictionaries at once, like, that'll be exciting.
Yeah, including your Google.
Yeah, no, but you know what's so interesting too? Just another quick point. I know we're running up on the hour, but I think there's has been such a focus on roaming personalization, ubiquitous roaming of personalization, whether it's data or app settings. I think the one thing that's gotten lost in this, and we talk about this, and I've been trying to preach this for some time now, is there are actually things that you don't want to roam, right?
Did we just lose him?
I still have you.
In terms of, you know, what is it that I don't want this user to be able to roam to a particular device in a particular scenario, you know, based on a particular context, even though maybe the user would want to do that, you know, and maybe, you know, we talk about obviously applications with, you know, patient data in hospitals, and we talk about trading floor applications. I think we've entered the era where ubiquitous application access, ubiquitous data access is upon us. And I think we need to spend more time as an industry thinking about how to make sure people don't get in trouble with those capabilities.
So, and I, it's interesting too, because, and some of that the IT organization is going to want to control, and some of that the user is going to want to control. Because right now, as a Dropbox user, I share certain folders with my colleagues, and I've got certain folders that I use that are not shared. And I guess you could say that all the personality aspects of that, like I don't want my browsing history to be, you know, synchronized with all my devices, so that when I'm on stage and I type in the word, you know, the letter P to go to like, you know, P-Desk website, it goes to like Pornography Lover or whatever. So, but thinking of that, I guess it's almost like with people are noticing the same thing with location history and these kinds of things, where if there's apps that track everything they do, they're sort of like, yeah, there's some things I don't want tracked.
Yeah, like with my Chrome on both of my computers, the bookmarks are tracked, but not the browsing history. So what I do at home on my laptop doesn't show up in my browsing history on the desktop.
I use a different browser for that.
Yeah. I mean, I do have
or porn mode.
Safari tracks my history.
three different browsers on. I use Safari to log into our consumerized IT Google Analytics account on my desktop, so that I don't have to log out.
And I have to use Safari. Safari's the only thing I can use to log into the VPN. So that's why I use Safari.
So all Safari does for me, it's my techtarget.com Google account for analytics. It's my VPN account, and it's all the porn. And so Google looks at this TechTarget user and it's like, oh man.
So bringing this around, you know, the question of is like going back to the client based VM, and the mere fact that the iOS application exists and that there are ways of pulling the data out and bringing it onto mobile devices in sanctioned ways, and that RES hyperdrive, no matter its province, the way just that all of these corporate mobile file syncing applications exist, I don't know if it's because I'm young and naive, but it just excites me so much. And because that way we can be like this future that we talk about of all your data on all your devices, this is now. And I know that sounds cliched and stupid and naive or whatever, but it makes me excited.
Well, it's nice that, I mean, it's a Dropbox concept. You know, and before we were bought by TechTarget, we used Groove, which became Microsoft bought them. And remember that?
Did we ever actually use that? I thought we tried like hell and just never got around to it.
No, we did, because the same share. Groove we used all the time. We never used the actual workspace for collaboration, but we used the Groove file syncing. Mm. And that may have been before. Is that before you? That doesn't make sense.
It could have been, but
I think that might have been before me.
Yeah.
I had trouble finding a solution that would work with your Mac.
That was
for the longest time you were the only Mac, and that kind of threw a monkey wrench in it.
What did we use? I don't even know. But we
used nothing. Remember, Emily was all mad because we couldn't share files outside of email until Dropbox came along.
Did we use Dropbox before TechTarget?
Yes. No, we didn't.
I don't think we did.
Yeah. Because I emailed Emily after the fact and said, hey, we got this awesome solution. You would have loved it.
So one of the comments, we got a few minutes left, and I'll just incidentally, one of the anonymous visitors is asking Jeff to explain why Hyperdrive is different from Absence Data Now. That's kind of apples and oranges, isn't it?
Yeah, I think they're quite different.
Yeah, I mean, from again, you know, the limited information we have about the Absence offering, you know, from what we can tell, it looks like it's some sort of a proxy to a pre-existing home drive. They also do talk about having policy capabilities over what it is that will be synced or that you can sort of take offline versus what you can't. That's all I really know about, you know, sort of the distinction between the two.
Okay, so look, in our just a few minutes left, I want to talk about next week. So next week is Citrix Synergy. It is here in San Francisco. Gabe is coming to town. We'll be here all week. So Gabe will be at Synergy. We'll be there. Jack will be there. Justin, our producer and video guy, will be there. What's our week for Synergy look like?
Busy. We've got meetings on Monday. I think Tuesday. Tuesday is almost nothing Synergy related for us. But then Wednesday, Thursday are Wednesday and Thursday are the big Synergy days. So those are the days that we'll be out there, you know, attending a few sessions. I think you're presenting at one or two. We've got all the expo hall floor time, and I'm sure we're going to do a radio show from Synergy. We're just probably not going to do one on Tuesday.
Tuesday is kind of the day before, so
yeah, there's no sense in doing it then and then waiting a whole week. So we might as well do it on, say, Thursday. I don't know. So really, I mean, as far as like the actual schedule for the week, I mean, we've got some plans, that kind of a thing, but otherwise, it's just crazy conference week. And you know, we'll be the site goes into conference mode, and we just kind of post stuff as we get it, and we'll have videos and keynote commentary and all that stuff. We're actually working on a Cover It Live keynote coverage solution so that we don't have a live blog and live tweets at the same time. We can kind of put it all together in one location on the site so we can, you know, readers can follow it just in from one location.
And Jack will be there looking at everything through the lens of consumerization, right?
Right. And we'll get the answer to the Citrix mobile application management question.
Right, because you wrote, who does Citrix need to buy for mobile application management? This is for doing sort of real mobile application management, like with their cloud gateways, so they can manage like iOS apps and everything. So we think that we're going to find that out. Here's your article on that. I'll post that in the forum.
And so finally, I'll just plug for Consumerization Nation on Thursday. That'll be 10 o'clock Pacific, 1 Eastern. Colin Steele and I will be joined by fellow TechTarget writer Jim Furbish, who is right now at BlackBerry World in Orlando or wherever it is. And
I believe he's staying at a Disney hotel, and he said that it's not that great of an experience because it's just a bunch of kids running around.
did he? What's his sense on the show? Is the show live? Did you hear what he wrote about BlackBerry World yet? Is it like a lively show, or is it kind of a Waking Dead?
Lots of excitement about BlackBerry 10 and their new touchscreen device, and it looks cool. And so hopefully he'll have gotten his hands on it by then. And you know, we're not really about the devices, but certainly the devices can generate a lot of buzz for them. But the other information around Mobile Fusion will be the interesting stuff for us.
Okay, so that's us. With the rest of this week, we'll look for Consumerization Nation on Thursday. Next week, we're at Synergy all week. The following week, I've got an event in San Francisco. If you go to events.techtarget.com, I'm giving my sort of state of the nation about the desktop virtualization industry. That is on Thursday, May 17th. And then the very next day, I hop on an airplane along with Gabe and Jack and Justin and our whole crew. And we fly over to London, where Bri Forum is taking place on May 23rd, 24th. So that's our next few weeks as we enter this busy conference season.
Yeah, now let's start planning for June because May is kind of clocked out. It's May 1, and we've got May booked up.
Yeah.
One last thing. I see in our show notes, why it says you're wearing a suit. I've never seen you in a suit.
Once ever. We'll post this. So we're doing this fun campaign where it's too hard to explain. I'll say this. We'll explain this campaign next week. But what I'll say is there's a video we need to shoot right now where I'm playing a business person, and I'm showing if you don't have security on your mobile device, you might as well just broadcast everything to the world. So I'm putting on a suit, or I'm wearing the suit now. I'm going outside with a bullhorn, like a megaphone, and I'm walking around downtown San Francisco, you know, quote unquote, broadcasting different business-only things I'm doing on my smartphone. So I'm going to be yelling out, like, the ATM, my PIN is, you know, 1945, and I just texted, you know, oh, look at tomorrow's stock results. Hey, this is insider trading information. Wow, we just lost that client. And I'm going to be walking down the street just with a bullhorn saying that to random people while it is video recorded. Now,
I think we need to. So Justin will be videotaping you. I think can Jack be there with a videotape?
We got
with
two
the,
cameras.
Videotaping? Can Jack be there getting like shots of people staring at you?
Well, here's the thing that's kind of crazy is that today is May Day and there's like a lot of protests sort of scheduled. Like last night, a whole bunch of shops were vandalized from some, like, I don't call it riots, but they were like smashing cars, and it's all this from this Occupy movement, which they say is not them. There's other anarchists that have like overtaken them. Regardless, there's a lot of stuff kind of going down. And they, so here I am, the Occupy, they're against the 1%, and I'm wearing a suit with a megaphone in downtown San Francisco while people follow me around with video cameras.
They'll think you're just a protester.
I don't know what they're going to think. It may end not well.
It could be fun.
Yeah.
I spent $10,000 on a gallon of milk. You know, you don't want to say that.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. But so hopefully I'll be talking to you guys later today. I don't get arrested or beaten by a mob. But that's
San Francisco. That's You're not going to get arrested.
Okay. On that note,
the mob mentality.
Thank you all for joining us today and for listening. Jeff Fisher, RES Software. Thank you for taking the time to call in.
Thank you guys for having me. It was great. Hope to do it again, and we'll see you at Synergy next week.
Yeah. All right, Gabe, Jack. Thank you all. We'll see you at Synergy, everyone, and from San Francisco on May 1st, 2012. This is Brian Madden from Brian and Gabe Live signing off.